League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast joining you again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and I am joined on the other line by the one and only Tom Haudricourt, Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And today, we're going to have a little fun. We're going to talk about something that we've referenced in the past, the Brewers Walk of Honor, or Walk of Fame, I should say. Wall of Honor, Walk of Fame, got to get that right. And the limited number of players who have been selected to be enshrined on the sort of the Brewers version of the Hollywood, you know, the Hollywood stars on the concrete outside Miller Park. We've talked about it briefly on the podcast in the past, how stingy it seems to get somebody on that Walk of Fame. A lot of luminaries who maybe myself or many others would love to see on there. So we're going to chat about that. Tom, how are you right now? We're gonna do some Hall of Fame litigation. We don't actually get the chance to do that all that often on this podcast. This should be kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've made it clear on Twitter with posts of the last few years, my unhappiness with how hard it's been to get people to the Walk of Fame. I'm not sure who's voting for it, but a lot of them don't know what they're doing. I'll just say that right out front. They need to take a little bit closer look at Brewers history. You know, I fear some of the voters weren't around when a lot of these guys that are on the ballot played or managed or whatever, but yeah, I mean, I think it's been I think the voters have pitched shutouts three of the last 4 years. Does that sound right to you?
It does. Yeah, we had a 2018 and a single inductee in 18 and a single inductee in 2016, and that's it.
Yeah, Jeff Jenkins and Teddy Higuera, were those the two?
Higuera's the single inductee from 2015. Joe Adcock, Milwaukee Braves great, is 2016.
Okay. Right, and Braves are on the ballot as well, Milwaukee Braves. You know, and there's hardly any of them left that haven't been elected because there wasn't that many, you know, to consider. We got, you know, just 12 years of them against 50 years of the Brewers. So, but I have my ballot ready, and I don't know how you want to jump in, but I'm willing to list the people I voted for, and I want you to tell me any of them don't belong on the Walk of Fame, JR. I'll let you be the judge and jury on that. How about that?
That sounds great. I'd love that. So before we do that, I want to point out some of the guys who are on here. Like you said, there are members of the Milwaukee Braves who are involved here as well. There's at least one guy I could think of that is not, that I would bring up in that capacity as well. Pretty much all of the very top tier greats in Brewers history are naturally already on this list. In fact, that first class in 2001 when Miller Park opened are some obvious ones. Hank Aaron, Raleigh Fingers, Paul Molitor, and Robin Yount. The next year, Cecil Cooper and Bud Selig were added. Harry Dalton and Bob Uecker, of course, are on this thing. Jim Gantner, Gorman Thomas, Harvey Keene and Don Money, a couple guys from that 82 team, late 70s, early 80s teams. Eddie Matthews and Warren Spahn. Man, took them a while to get on there, all the way in 2007 before the two of the greats from the Milwaukee Braves territory.
John Quinn, right, that year?
Yep, the general manager of the Braves as well, John Quinn. So very Braves-heavy in 2007. We had Lou Burdett and Johnny Logan in 2010 and 2013, respectively. Then, like we said, Teddy Higuera in 2015, Joe Adcock 2016, Jeff Jenkins in 2018. So that's you don't want it to be a huge list. Right. You want it to be exclusive to a degree.
Right. But since 07, which is 13 years ago, five people have gone on, and two of them were Braves. Three of them were Braves. Burdett, right. Logan, and Eckhart. So only two Brewers in 50 years of the franchise history have gotten on in the last 13 years. Tell me that's right.
That does not feel right. And I said this before, no disrespect to Jeff Jenkins, a player I loved watching growing up. But it seems odd to me. I mean, there are so many other guys I would pick before him.
Yeah.
And he's a great player, and I think ultimately he would make this list. But there are a lot of guys out there that I'm like, Jeff Jenkins is on there and not this guy. And you can make that case for a couple others as well. But it's strange to me that he's the last name we have on this list.
And as you said, Jeff Jenkins deserves to be on there. So I'm not going to complain about anybody that's on there. I'm going to just complain about the ones who aren't on there. And And here's the other thing. When it became evident a few years back that nobody was getting on, or very few people were getting on, they lowered the requirement from 75%, which is the Hall of Fame standard, the Cooperstown Hall of Fame standard, to 65%. So we only need 6.5 out of every 10 people to vote for somebody. And I wonder if we lowered it to 50%, how many people we'd get in, you know? So, it doesn't make sense to me. I think people think this is holding this to a Hall of Fame standard, to a Cooperstown standard. This is not Cooperstown. This is honoring Brewers' greatness for the team. And there's a lot of people that had greatness that have not been honored.
You said you didn't know everybody who voted for it, but can you give a little bit of insight on the process? I know that media people are voting on it, but also members of the organization and the front office and things like that. So I imagine there are votes coming from a number of different avenues.
I don't know. You know, they do keep that kind of to themselves for obvious reasons. Too bad we don't have the baseball writers. We have transparency on our Hall of Fame votes for the most part. Most of us do publish our ballots. The one person who did not vote for Derek Jeter did not. and so we'll probably never know who that was. But most of us do. And I wish we had transparency on this. Maybe it would make people if you got held to open ridicule like I do for my Hall of Fame ballot, maybe people would, be a little better about who they vote for. So I just don't know how much effort people are putting into this, whether they don't consider it serious or not, but I consider it serious. I've been covering the team since 1985, and I think I know who does and doesn't belong on their Walk of Fame. So anyway.
Yeah, and one quick thing I want to amend. I said it took a while, 2007, to get Eddie Matthews and Warren Spahn and John Quinn on there. That's the first year they added the Braves part. So Hank Aaron is on there in that inaugural class, but is more of an honorary degree in that case, just as a Milwaukee personality. He played for the Brewers, but as we know, he was bigger as a Milwaukee Brave. But those guys got added.
Right, and one thing I do give the Brewers credit for, and they deserve credit, is they have done a good job of keeping the Braves' history alive, a lot of it through their relationship with the Milwaukee Braves Historical Association. And so, I mean, they could just say, hey, you guys left us high and dry, walked out of town, and screw you, we're not going to vote for you guys or honor you guys, but they haven't done that. They have recognized that part of Milwaukee baseball history, and the Brewers deserve credit for doing that.
Definitely. So we'll get into some of the individual cases. I think I know who, if you had to pick one guy that you really feel like is standing out, I think I know which direction you'd go, but I'll let you start. Give me a name that you really feel like is the most egregious omission at this point off of the Walk of Fame.
Well, first of all, let me count. I voted for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I voted for 11 Brewers on the
ballot. Holy smokes. 11. And none of them got in. None of them.
And two Braves. So, but if you made me rank them in order of egregiousness of not getting in, well, he's not a player, but how is George Bamberger not in?
Right.
I mean, he was the manager when the team finally got good and came back for a second time, and that was mostly ruined by a heart attack. This guy was one of the most beloved people. They named a team was named for him, Bambi's Bombers. You know what? How can you not consider him? So I have him right up there. You know, as far as players, come on, Mike Caldwell's not in. Mike Caldwell's not in. That guy was one of the best pitchers ever, one of the few to ever win 20 games. He pitched for him for 7 years. You know, he's one of the reasons they went to the World Series in 82 and one of the reasons they got good. A guy who, unlike today's Brewers, you could not get the ball out of his hand when he went out to the mound until the game was over. And so those guys stick out for me. But, I mean, George Scott, that guy won a – what did he win, 5 Gold Gloves?
Yeah, I believe so. Or is it 6? I don't remember that off the top of my head.
He's got like 80% of the franchise's Gold Gloves is by George Scott. Plus, he deserves to get in for once saying that something that was a little additional that he wasn't expecting was gravy on the cake. He gets in just for that quote to me.
So, yeah, he's got 5 Gold Gloves with the Brewers, 7 overall in his career, 2 with the Red Sox as well.
A guy that you and me talked about a lot on a recent podcast, Ben Sheets. I mean, come on. One of the greatest pitchers in club history. And 2, let me give you, a whole bunch of 82 Brewers, guys like Ovi, Vukovic, you know, Jim Slayton is one of the most underappreciated players in club history, I think. A lot of those guys think Simmons, Vukovic, Ovi, all those guys didn't play long enough, although Benji played 8 years. And therefore, they don't seem to consider because they just don't like their longevity or lack thereof. But other guys that I will suggest to you in more modern times that had very long and successful careers for the Brewers include Greg Vaughn, Jeff Cirillo, and Dan Plesac.
Yeah, Plesac's an interesting case, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse because I will talk about him more as the all-time saves leader in franchise history. He's got the most appearances as a pitcher in franchise history. He's got one of the best ERAs. I mean, he was very good, and I know him toward the tail end of the Brewers teams he was on weren't very good, but he was very strong, very strong for a long time.
You also need to judge him against players from other teams. I'm pretty sure he's the only Brewers pitcher ever to go to 3 straight All-Star games.
He did indeed go to 3 straight, 87, 88, and 89. Like I
said, only one, right, JR? Only one, isn't he?
Did Ben Sheets go to 3 straight? I don't know about that off the top of my head.
I don't think so, but I'll
look. I don't either. So yeah, I mean, we're talking about one of the best relief pitchers of his era.
Right.
If not arguably he's probably not the best, but he's still definitely in that conversation.
And you know what, JR? I believe in extra credit for guys, and one of the most beloved Brewers. He comes back and, you know, fills in on broadcast from time to time. He's gone on to a great career at the MLB Network and openly roots and loves for the Brewers. I mean, what else does he have to do?
And I do think extra credit is an interesting concept because you sort of alluded to this. Longevity is kind of important here. You don't want somebody, I would imagine, who just was there for a short period of time. And I do think ultimately that's why a guy like Pete Vukovic won't wind up on there. I also think Vukovic's numbers actually just aren't all that great. He was a Cy Young winner and a representative during one of the best times in Brewers history. But when you look at, you know, again, Hank Aaron is in that inaugural class. And
right.
In theory, that's for the 2 years he spent with the Brewers, mostly forgettable years at the end of his career.
But
now,
he gets why he gets in. But he gets the ultimate extra credit.
100%.
You know, for being the probably the greatest player ever to play in Milwaukee.
Yeah, so you know, that's a no-brainer, but it's also, you know, it is cheating the system to a degree. I also think Raleigh Fingers, as great as he was, Cy Young MVP in 81, he really only played 4 seasons in Milwaukee, and that then, in my mind, opens the door for a lot of other guys. Ted
like
Simmons.
Pete Vukovic, you know, I thought Ted Simmons getting in Cooperstown over the winter, whether it was the Modern Era Committee or not, I thought that might give him some extra credit to get in with the Brewers, but he didn't. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Didn't help him, you know, so.
And to go back to Bamberger, and we mentioned this, I think, on a past podcast, the thing working against him is something you said. People are sort of forgetting George Bamberger's contributions.
Right.
And they're not being remembered in history because those Brewers teams, I mean, the 78 team is that first good Brewers team. And they finished 3rd in the American League East because of the way the system was. 93 wins and they were 7 games out of a playoff spot. So we don't remember that as a success historically because they didn't go to the playoffs. They were still, you know, 4 years away from really getting into a groove. But you know, Bamberger turned that around. Like you said, Bambi's Bombers is something that you ask anyone in Milwaukee, even somebody in my generation, we know who Bambi's Bombers are. We know what that refers to. So and he was such a personality. And if you've got Harvey Keene on there, again, they went to the 82 World Series. I get it. But Harvey Keene was not a manager for a long period of time. There are many other managers who've been here longer.
Less than two years.
So if you're going to give Harvey Keene a spot, you got to give George Bamberger a spot. He fits the criteria.
Thank you. God. If he ever gets on, I wish he'd still be alive to hear his acceptance speech. It'd have to be on a 10-second delay.
There would be some swear words.
I think I've said this, and excuse me if I've said it on the podcast. He was from Staten Island, and he just cursed like a sailor. And but sometimes, you know, when you curse so much, it's actually not cursing because it just was actually part of his language. But I've told people a lot of times, and I caught him right at the end of his career and right at the start of my Brewers career. But I love the guy. But he is the only person I ever met who could use the F word as a verb, an adjective, a noun, a pronoun, and also a complete sentence.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy.
I've told you about him seeing Rob Deere in spring training, right?
I don't know if you did.
You know, George's last year with the Brewers was Rob Deere's first year with the Brewers, and no one had any idea who Rob Deere was. He was acquired in like a minor league trade with the Giants or whatever, and he shows up in spring training. And we're behind the batting cage down there in Chandler. It was also the first year in Chandler. We had that explosion right away, too. Deere, I don't know, for those who you're too young, JR, to have been in the Chandler complex, but it was a sunken stadium with a berm in the outfield, kind of like they have now in Maryvale. And then up beyond that field was a field on an elevated level. And Rob Deere stepped into the batting cage one day, and he was hitting balls over the fence of that main stadium, over the berm, and onto that elevated field in the back. I mean, these were 500-foot. I know it was batting practice, but still, it was incredible. And so one day he's putting on this prolific display, and George is entertaining us behind the behind the batting cage, and everybody just kind of stops and watches Deere just hit these ridiculous moonshots out of sight. And finally, George turns around and he sees him hit like three in a row, and he turns to us and he goes, "Who the F is that guy?" And I said, "George, that's Rob Deere." He goes, "Well, he's on the effing team." And he was.
He was. Oh, that's very funny. 93 wins in 1978, 95 in 1979. That team still finished 8 games out, just the way the divisions were stacked.
No wild cards back then.
Yeah, so that team takes second.
You know, we forget the other thing people don't realize is those Brewers were competing in the AL East, JR. So they were in with the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Tigers, the Orioles. I mean, come on!
Yeah, and then just when those teams maybe took a little break from their competitiveness in the early 90s, it's the Toronto Blue Jays that keep the Brewers out of the playoffs in 1992.
So, I mean, you have to realize who the heck they were competing against, too. I mean,
right.
They were facing these ridiculous big market powerhouses, and George had them competing right with them.
Yeah, in 1980, he steps aside. The Brewers are have a winning record at that point. Buck Rogers takes over. Rogers winds up leading the Brewers to their first playoff appearance in 1981, and then he's there for half of 82 before Harvey Keene takes over. And Harvey Keene's a good story. He's a hometown guy. You know, he leads them to the World Series. Incredibly endearing personality, and he's there for, you know, the 83 season as well. But again, like, you know, he accomplished some stuff. But George Bamberger laid the groundwork for where this franchise ultimately headed, and he really should be acknowledged. I wonder if him coming back later in his career and managing a couple unimpressive Brewers teams hurts maybe in the eyes of voters, because his overall managerial record then doesn't reflect how good those first teams were.
And he did that iconic thing when he had that heart attack in spring training. So Buck Rogers has to take over on an interim basis. on that terrible black and white scoreboard at County Stadium, George filmed a video message and to the fans that they played before the home opener, in which he, you know, said he planned to be back as soon as possible from his heart attack. I think he had quadruple bypass surgery, for God's sakes. And he said, in the meantime, have a beer on me. And so, as if Brewers fans needed to be encouraged to have a beer. But that was the Sixto Lescano Grand Slam in the ninth inning year home opener, one of the most iconic things. We've talked about it on the podcast. You've written about it. And Sixto Lescano held up a beer in the clubhouse after the game and said, George said to have a beer on him here. I'm having one on him.
That's awesome. Yeah, the Sixto opening day, I think the only day that matches that or comes close to matching it, because I do think that's the best opening day in Brewers history, is Lorenzo Cain's game-saving catch in 2019, just this last year. So
Sixto, by the way, is on this ballot too.
Yes, Sixto. I actually wasn't even considering him. I mean, just because there's a lot of other guys first, but one of the more popular players in the 70s. I'm going to give you the guy who I think is most egregious. It's not the guy I would have thought of when I first started diving in. Originally, one of the comments I made to you is, how is Don Money on this list but not Jeff Cirillo? Cirillo is the all-time batting leader in this in this organization. And I looked at their numbers and, you know, comparable. Don Money's been here longer. He's probably more valuable over time. It's probably that Don Money is the better player over time. But then I started looking, and they don't play the same position, but I started looking at Ben Ogilvie's numbers.
Yes.
And Ben Ogilvie has better numbers than Don Money, even with less time played. I mean, Money was here, I think, 11 years.
Right.
Ben Ogilvie's got more homers, more RBIs. He's got a better OPS. He's got all the peripheral numbers.
He was on the all 50th anniversary team that Todd Rosiak and I picked out. He was one of the left fielders.
Right.
So what? He's like one of the best players in franchise history, and he can't get on their walk of fame. Ben Ogilvie is, and I voted for him. I got a check mark next to him. He also played 8 years, JR. He's not one of those guys that came in and only played a couple years, you know, when they made the playoffs and then was gone. You know, he made that incredible catch in game 162 and 82 when they beat the Orioles after losing the first three games to fall into a tie, and they were on the verge of choking the division, you know. And the day that Robin hit, you know, two homers off Jim Palmer and Don Sutton pitched a great game, a lot of people forget that Benji made this incredible sliding catch in the corner that snuffed a rally that could have changed the game. So, you know, they called him Spider-Man because of the way he kind of was all arms and legs. And he was one of the best crash and burn sliders I've ever seen. When he slid, it was like, you know, a five-alarm fire. It just was all over the place. But, man, is his... Like you just said, you go look at his numbers. His numbers were incredible. And they got lost because there were so many other good numbers, you know?
Exactly. That's what I would say is he comes to the Brewers later in his career. He's on that 78 team and, you know, at age 29.
Right.
But 9 years with the Brewers, three all-star teams. He's there for the best, literally, you know, the return of the Brewers. I mean, he's there in 78. He's there in 80, 81, 82. You know, these are the teams that... you know, got the franchise on the map, essentially. He's in the shadow of Molitor and Yount and some of the other guys we've talked about, but he's got an 806 OPS. His batting average is 277, maybe nothing to sneeze, you know, to I guess really write home about overall, but 176 home runs, 685 RBIs in nine seasons.
What was his slugging percentage, Cheryl?
461 in his 9 years. And again, these are the last years of his career, so this isn't prime Ben Ogilvie.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, I look at – no, and again, you don't want to talk about the guys that are on there. I mean, Don Money should be on there, no questions asked. But Don Money is a 421 slugging guy, 760 OPS. Yeah. He's got 134 home runs in two more years. Again, Ogilvie's got him beat there, beat in RBIs. I mean, Money's a very good defensive player too. You can't take that out of the equation. But like you just said, Ogilvie's – one of his – probably the thing he's most known for is that catch in left field, that Spider-Man catch. Yeah. So you got to have him.
This is why I'm, you know, have suggested that people are not doing their research on these guys, because the more you look at some of these guys, the more you like them. You know it?
Yeah.
Or the more you should like them. So I mean, again, this is supposed to be the best players in franchise history, not Cooperstown level guys. And, you know, some of these people we've already honored on the all 50th anniversary team, yet they can't get on their own Walk of Fame. Come on.
And you had mentioned Ben Sheets. I think I delivered my love letter to Ben Sheets last week, and every day I get
the
opportunity.
One of the best pitchers they've ever had. And you know what? We're not talking about an organization that's had a lot of good pitchers.
No, that's true. I think he will get on there. I think there's still a recency thing. I don't know how many years out the Walk of Fame standard is for before they start to acknowledge a player, if it's just your standard 5 years. Prince Fielder's another one. I mean, he's going to be on here. So I don't feel like we need to spend too much time talking about those guys. But, you know, Ben Sheets has been out a while now. I think he's probably it's time that guy gets his due, right?
Like, yeah, let's do it while they can come and enjoy it and bring his kids and stuff. He's a great guy, you know.
For sure.
And here's another guy that's, I think, being penalized for playing on bad teams. It wasn't his fault.
You're absolutely right.
He had the losing record the year he had maybe the greatest pitch season ever in club history.
Yeah, the 2004 Ben Sheets season, in my opinion, it's not even a dispute. It is by far the best pitching season in club history.
He would have had a good record, JR. The modern day BBW writers have gotten past one loss records, which is why guys like Jacob DeGrom win the Cy Young now, as they should. But if he would have had – back then, I think one-loss records were, you know, looked at more heavily. If he would have had won like 15 or 16 games that year, he might have won the Cy Young Award.
For sure. And he ends up way out of the running. I believe Randy Johnson wins it that year. And I remember looking back and thinking, okay, Randy Johnson was probably going to win the Cy Young Award in any era. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. He would have been recognized more for that performance. And you know, Ben Sheets – didn't pitch in the playoffs, but he pitched on a team, that 2008 team, and like willed them there for much of the season when CC Sabathia wasn't pitching. You know, he was the other star of that team and got hurt late in the year. We talked about that last week. He's got that 18th strikeout game in 2004, one of the greatest pitching performances in Brewers history. He's flirted with no-hitters on multiple occasions, and he struck out a lot of guys, but he's not going to be thought of as a hammer strikeout guy because he got so many outs, you know, using his curveball.
Also, while he was a Milwaukee Brewers property, won the gold medal game in the Olympics against Cuba.
That is right, yes.
So, you know, if we're going to talk extra credit, that's a humongous extra credit.
3.72 ERA in his career with the Brewers. Like you said, win-loss record, not great. 86-83 because he played for bad teams. His whip's a little higher than I would have remembered at 1.2, but still pretty good.
A lot of times he was pitching with, you know, physical issues too. He had trouble staying healthy. But when he was good, he was really good.
I would actually compare him a little bit in terms of collective memory to a guy we've talked about here, Mike Caldwell. They have very similar ERAs, pretty similar workloads. Yep. Again, Caldwell, let people on base, 1.274 whip is good. It's not legendary by any means, but it's good.
Pitching in the AL East, though.
That's right. That. Yeah, that does need to be said because Ben Sheets, as much as I love him, we're talking about the National League Central, and there are teams in the National League Central that are bad.
And no DH, you know.
That's right. So the American League East is a different animal. So Caldwell's got a better ERA than Sheets over his career, 3.69 ERA. This is how many seasons is Caldwell here? Is it
eight, when you count
77, he split time with Cincinnati that year, but then eight years overall. And he pitches – one of the, I think, forgotten games in Brewers history is game one of the World Series, 1982.
It's a shutout.
Complete game, shutout. He had allowed only one hit through seven innings. Finishes with a three-hitter, 10-0. The Brewers beat the Cardinals. I mean, Milwaukee had to think they were going to win the World Series when they won game one of the World Series, 10-0.
What's his number of complete games and shutouts as a Brewer?
Oh, he's got 79 complete games and 18 shutouts.
Come on!
I mean, that's a bygone era, but like those numbers will pop up.
You know, case closed right there.
Yeah, I think so. And I said this about Teddy Higuera. Why don't we remember him more fondly? Is it because he wasn't a I don't know, superstar ace pitcher. He didn't go to any All-Star games, so maybe that's part
of
it.
Yeah, he wasn't like a crazy, wacky, lovable character, good quote. He's kind of, you know, kind of a scowlish guy at times, like Vukovic was. He also was known among his teammates for one of the best idiosyncrasies of any Brewers ever. He carried a briefcase, and all he had in it was a bottle of ketchup.
It's so weird. What was the story? Do you know the story behind that? I know that's a thing.
He said he couldn't,
but
in a lot of places he couldn't get a bottle of ketchup. So, you know, he had a briefcase, like a businessman's briefcase, you know, an office worker's briefcase. And if you opened it, you expect to see like all these papers or, you know, magazines or all this stuff. No, bottle of ketchup.
Extremely strange. Very weird. But I remember, I think it was him who always had a really dirty baseball cap. You know, he just kind of looked like an old school pitcher.
He also coached in the organization. He was a pitching coach for them in their organization, too. So
interesting.
So some more extra credit right there.
Dang right. That's why Don Money's on this list. He had the extra credit of being in the organization for so long. Yeah. We got to get Mike Caldwell the same.
A pitching coach in the system for a few years.
Yeah, he's got to get credit for that. So definitely agree that he should be on there. You know, we already talked about Dan Plesac, and again, his WHIP 1.232. I actually, when I first started being aware of the Brewers, right around 90, 91, 92, I wasn't a Dan Plesac fan because I feel like he blew a lot of games. You know, in my head, this is the end of his career in Milwaukee, and he wasn't as superstar as he had been in the late 80s. But
we talked about Ben Sheets being penalized for being on bad teams. You know who has, in my opinion, been penalized forever for it is Jim Slayton.
Sure, absolutely.
He had two different tours of duty with the Brewers, and he's right up there in games pitched, complete games, shutouts. But, you know, he doesn't have a great record. And he also pitched multiple roles. He pitched as a reliever and a start. And he was like, during the time he pitched, he was their best pitcher. You know what?
Yeah, I think if you asked the average Brewers fan, who is the franchise leader in games started, innings pitched, wins, and shutouts?
They would never come up with him, ever.
They wouldn't come up with Jim Slayton.
So I'm not saying he's like, you know, egregiously out there, but he deserves strong consideration.
And he pitched for so long in the organization. I mean, he's 71 to 77, then he's with Detroit in 78, and then he's back with Milwaukee for another 5 years.
How much better would his numbers have been if he played for some decent teams? You know, they finally got good his second time around, and he was a very useful pitcher for them then.
My caveat to Jim Slayton and also to Pete Vukovic, I do weigh that WHIP statistic pretty highly because I do think that if you let a lot of base runners on, you know, maybe your good defense overcomes it, but you've got to be somebody who can limit base runners.
You know what,
and Jim Slayton never did that.
You talked to Simmons and some of the guys that play with him. Vukie would put guys on because he didn't want to pitch to him. You know, he would walk two guys to load the bases to get to the next guy and get him out. So he didn't
that's
give
bold.
A damn about WHIP, JR.
Oh, I'm sure he didn't. That's obviously what makes Pete Vukovic so endearing. He didn't give a damn about much. He was just a bulldog.
But you got, I mean, all he did is win. He also pitched in the World Series with a torn rotator cuff.
Indeed, he did in Game 5 of the ALCS against the California Angels. He wasn't like a sterling performance, but he kept them in the game. They win that one of the more exciting games in Brewers history, if not the biggest. So he was there for some of the big moments. I do think Vukovic, what holds him back, in addition to my WHIP argument, he just was only pitching for the Brewers for 5 years, in the organization for 6, missed a year with the arm injury. It's not his fault. The injuries crept up on him. I do think you could make an argument he won a Cy Young Award, which is pretty cool. But I don't know. I think between the longevity issue and the numbers, he probably is on the outside, my personal outside looking in.
Got elected. Would you like be pissed off? I would.
Oh, of course not. I would. No, of course not. I would love to have him back at Miller Park just to, I know he comes back every once in a while, but I'd love to hear his speech.
He gets the extra credit of playing Clue Haywood in Major League.
He sure does. When he sneezes, his nose looks like a party favor.
I mean, how many former pitchers could get away with playing that role? A slugging the nasty part, yes. But, you know, a slugging first baseman, home run terror. This guy was a pitcher, and he pulled it off with ease.
I loved, in my 50 and 50 series that I'm doing at jsonline.com, I loved the one I wrote about the trade in 1980, that late 1980 that brings Raleigh Fingers, Pete Vukovic, and Ted Simmons to the Milwaukee Brewers from the Cardinals, who, of course, they wind up playing 2 years later in the World Series for Sixto Lescano, Larry Sorensen, a couple other guys.
The key to that deal, much like Matt LaPorta, was the
yes,
key
Dave the, Green and Dave LaPorta.
It was David Green.
And David Green, in fairness, did play in the World Series against the Brewers, but obviously the Brewers would make that trade over 20 times out of 20. That one worked out, so Vukovic is good. Revisiting Jeff Cirillo real quickly. He again, best batter in franchise history, batting average-wise. I mean, he was on some terrible teams and very popular player. Made an all-star team with the Brewers. I don't know if his numbers overall quite meet the threshold, but again, he's very close to an 800 OPS. We're talking about a guy that if he got elected, absolutely nobody would bat an eye. He is very beloved in this organization.
Got on the wrong plane to the All-Star game, too. He gets extra credit for that.
No, I don't know that story.
Well, I forget whether it was Boston or Cleveland that the All-Star game was in, but the year he was elected to – look it up for me, what year he was elected as an All-Star. Look it up for me. I don't
Yeah, 77 – or 77, geez. 97 is the year. That's at Jacobs Field.
Okay, so he was – so he gets elected to the All-Star game. This is pre-9/11 and TSA. He gets on the plane. He sits down. This woman next to him goes, "Hey, aren't you the Brewers' Jeff Cirillo?" And his chest just expands with pride. I'm being recognized. Yes, I am. Thank you for recognizing. And she says, "Well, where are you going, Jeff?" And he goes, "I'm going to the All-Star game." And she says, "Well, isn't the All-Star – I give this woman credit for knowing this. She goes, "Isn't the All-Star game in Cleveland this year?" And he goes, "Yeah, why?" She goes, "Well, this plane's going to Boston."
Incredible. So did he get off the plane or did he end up flying to Boston?
But he was going to – can you imagine when he lands in Boston and he finds out there's no All-Star game?
How does somebody get on a plane without the proper ticket even before
it's unimaginable now, isn't it? Unimaginable.
Yeah, it is. A good answer to the trivia question, the last Brewers American League All-Star, Jeff Cirillo, in 1997. He struck out in his only plate appearance. Very sad, but that is awesome. That's a great story. He's a really cool guy. He's very, very smart.
And just
very
let me
fun
say
to talk
this,
to.
He's going to kill me for saying this. He is quite irked that he hasn't made the Walk of Fame.
Well, the thing about batting average, now we don't value batting average as much, or at least we don't value it relative to other statistical measures. But like, you can't hold it against a guy for, at the time, being somebody who was excellent at a skill that was highly valued.
Right.
What's
his career OBP with the Brewers?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me go.
That's where
we
put more focus on that now than batting. I'm guessing it was pretty daggone good.
Yeah, I'm guessing it was too.
And he was traded because the Brewers were no good and they didn't see the point of paying him, and went on and tore it up with the Rockies for a few years too.
As many players do. I mean, his numbers are very good. .384 on base percentage. This is just his first stint in Milwaukee. He came back for a couple years. So these are his prime years. .384 on base. .838 OPS. I mean, that outshines a lot of the people we've talked about. We talked about Boomer Scott. Yeah. This guy's numbers are better. So he definitely is in this conversation here. And .307 batting average, again, is best in team history. He was great.
If you're statistically the best hitter in club history for a franchise that Paul Molitor played for, you belong on that team's Walk of Fame.
Yeah, I agree with you. 100%. And it's not like the 2 years when he came back, he had bad numbers either. I mean,
he was good.
He was very good.
He was in a completely different role. He was a backup fielder. And whenever he was kind of like Craig Counsell was at the end of his career and very productive like Counsell was too, which leads to another one of my favorite Jeff Cirillo stories. When Drew Olsen can vouch for this, Drew Olsen and I were covering the team, and we had this, you know, really unique, friendly relationship with Cirillo, kind of sarcastic friendship. And he was on the bench, and he was pinch hitting only and wasn't doing well over the stretch. And he came to Drew and he says, "Hey, tell, you know, Ned's asking me to do pinch hit, and I don't get enough at bats. And how am I supposed to be successful in this? And tell him I need to get, you know, tell him, you guys tell him he needs to play me more." So then somebody got hurt, and Cirillo like started five straight games, and like the fifth game went like 0-for-5. And Cirillo comes up to me and Drew says, "Hey, go tell Ned he's killing me. He can't keep playing me this much."
Oh my gosh, great stuff. Put that man in the Walk of Fame. Put him in there with Ben Ogilvie and George Bamberger and Dan Plesac and Mike Caldwell and Ben Sheets and Prince Fielder. Let's get this done, guys.
Please, I don't get it. If you're not voting for these people, then you shouldn't have a ballot.
One last name I'll throw out there from the Braves era. Del Crandall is probably one guy.
He's my two. I voted for remember I told you I voted for 11 Brewers? I voted for two Braves. I voted for Bob Buell and Del Crandall.
And I think either one of those guys would be great. Del Crandall made a ton of all-star teams. He made, I believe, 8 of them in his like 10 years with the Braves. So with the Milwaukee Braves anyway.
And then the extra credit of coming back and managing them.
That's right. No doubt.
And he's the guy who asked the question in 1974, why shouldn't we keep Robin Yount? Well, Robin Yount was 18 years old and had played 60 games in the minors. Robin told me a great story about that. He says it's the end of spring training. They're starting to cut people. He's expecting to be cut. He's played 60 games in low A ball, and he's 18 years old. And they're on a bus somewhere in spring training to go play an exhibition game. And one of the coaches comes back and tells Robin, Del wants to talk to you up in the front of the bus. He goes, "Well, this is it. This is, you know, I'm getting cut. I'm going to go up there and take it like a man, you know." And so he goes up there and he sits down next to Del. And Del says to Robin, "We decided to keep you as our starting shortstop." And Robin said, "You could have driven an 18-wheeler into his mouth because his jaw hit the ground." And Robin swears this is what he said to Del. "Are you sure that's the right thing to do?"
Rob, because back then he couldn't say, "But what about my arbitration clock?"
Exactly. So extra credit to Del Crandall.
Oh man, that is a good story. You know, I didn't realize that was at his urging that happened. So yeah, Robin Yount makes his debut as an 18-year-old, and Del Crandall definitely belongs in there. His batting average isn't going to pop. It's .259, but you got to factor in his last season where he was, you know, sort of at the tail end of his career, wasn't very good at the end. But he
coming back and managing the team. Come on.
Yeah, 8 All-Star teams and came back and managed the team. Like, that's get that man in there. Get that man in there.
What do you got to do to get on this walk?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. And Jeff Jenkins solved the riddle, I guess, in 2018. And it remains to be seen if anybody else will ever get a shot at it again. Like you said, maybe Ted Simmons going into the Hall of Fame will sort of catalyze that a little bit, right? Especially when you see Raleigh Fingers, you know, a guy who played about as long and had a similar career trajectory.
So I would just make two suggestions to people that get about the ballot next January. I think the ballots come out in January, so we do have a long time. But we're in a pandemic now, so we can talk about whatever we want. Two suggestions I would make to anybody that gets a ballot next year: do some research, you know, like we talked about with Ben Ogilvie. I think you'll be surprised if you take a deeper dive into some of these guys' careers. You'll be surprised. And the other thing is, remember, it's the Brewers Walk of Fame, not Cooperstown. Those are my two suggestions.
Definitely. Here's a sort of a offshoot conversation. We talked last week about whether or not, or maybe it wasn't last week, but recently whether or not the Brewers would retire Ryan Braun's number when his career ends in Milwaukee, thinking the possibility that 2020 was his last season in Milwaukee. Hopefully we haven't already seen his last season in Milwaukee, but it's an issue that's a little touchy. But like you said, guys like, you know, Mark Attanasio will have a lot of say in that, right. And obviously Mark Attanasio has got to be fond of Braun. He's given him a couple contracts, you know, long-term contracts, right. So I'm sure there's a good rapport there. Cecil Cooper is another one that yes. I often wonder about, and yeah. I feel like, you know, Braun probably has surpassed Cecil Cooper's career contributions, but I just wrapped up, and it hasn't run yet, my 50 and 50 article on the game-winning hit in 1982 in the ALCS, the seventh inning single that played to two runs and gave the Brewers the runs they needed to beat the Angels and go to the World Series. And just diving into Cooper's career, you know, five-time All-Star with the Brewers, a guy who was pretty sure-handed at first base, I would say very sure-handed at first base, and a guy who just hit the ball. I mean, he was an incredible hitter. Yep. And I feel like he has risen to the level in my mind of somebody that, if again, Hank Aaron, Rolly Fingers, they belong up there, but if we're talking about Milwaukee Brewers in terms of longevity and production, Cecil Cooper's got to be there. They've got to retire that number, I would think, at some point.
As the biggest hit in franchise history.
Without question. Without question, it's the biggest in franchise history.
And a lot of people think Jim Gantner belongs on there, too, just for longevity, being a Wisconsin guy and being one of the best at his position for a long time. And I don't know if people have noticed this, but I'm pretty sure no one has worn number 17 since Jim Gantner retired. But lots of people have worn Cooper's number 15, including the guy we just talked about. I'm pretty sure Ben Sheets wore it, didn't he?
You know, if Cooper's number gets retired, Ben Sheets is going to show up at that ceremony and be like, look it.
That'd be awesome.
Y'all retired my jersey.
Thank you. You know, like a George Costanza moment where he gets up there and just totally gets it wrong. That'd be fantastic.
Totally.
Or else he just comes, brings his kids, says, hey, kids, look, see that number 15? They've retired it.
Yeah, three times Cecil Cooper finished in the top five in the MVP vote, also took eighth place one year. That's a four-year stretch, actually, from 80 to 83. So it wasn't, I mean, he was regarded as one of the very top players on that 82 team. And I know we associate Paul Molitor, but really, I mean, I think Robin Yount, Cecil Cooper, Paul Molitor, they were all Gantner too, if you want to include him, but in terms of offense, they were a three-headed monster.
Yep.
And Cooper did not have a good postseason leading into that big hit against the Angels. He proceeded to have a very good World Series. He's just he's an all-timer, and he does come back, and I know that the Brewers celebrate him, but I think the time should have come here
where his number belongs on the facade. And if they do it, who's going to complain? That's kind of a test I use, you know, because people complain about everything.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if there's a hesitancy because he's not a Hall of Famer, you know, and everybody else who's up there is. Right. He's not a baseball Hall of Famer.
Yeah. But once this is Brewers retired jerseys, not, you know, Cooperstown. I think we need to just separate these things. You know, it's you're celebrating the best ever to wear your uniform.
Yeah. And I think there was a misconception a while back that it was only Hall of Famers that were even in consideration to be up on the facade, but I don't believe that's true. In fact, I think Robin Yount was retired before he was officially inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. I want to say his jersey was retired in 96 or 97, and he goes in a couple years later. But I know Rolly Fingers got inducted, and he was pretty – I think they retired his number that year that he had been inducted, like, you know, a couple of weeks before the induction ceremony. Right. They brought him back to County Stadium. So I don't know if that's where that comes from.
And I think almost all fans would like to see Gumby's number retired.
Yeah, in terms of – obviously, we've talked about this. In terms of offensive production, there are a lot of guys who surpass him. But in terms of beloved Brewers – You just can't
top
it. Well,
service to the team, and he still puts on the uniform and coaches all during, you know, before every home game, you know?
Yeah, he's his Brewer. He's
an ambassador. He's one of their ambassadors. And I'm pretty sure he and Molitor and Yount played the longest of any three teammates in Major League history. I'm pretty sure that still holds true.
I mean, I find it hard to believe anything will be, you know, no one's going to surpass that. I don't know how they can the way free agency works now.
Well, not in modern, forget it. If it didn't happen shortly afterward, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. One more thought. We we're not going to talk much about the Wall of Honor. The nice thing the Brewers did with the Wall of Honor is they created very concrete numbers that a player has to hit. It's not about value. It's about
there's criteria, you know.
Exactly.
So you either make it or you don't.
Right, and that's cool. The Brewers were going to welcome a few guys back again this year. Carlos Gomez among them that were going to be on that list. I often find myself thinking about a guy like CeCe Sabathia or in a previous, 1982 Don Sutton, guys who played very short times but left a very lasting impact. If you walk around Miller Park, you could get on the club level and they have murals on the club level and you'll see there's a scene with Sabathia in it. As far as I know, that's the only place anywhere in Miller Park that Sabathia's name is mentioned. And I don't know if there is a way to do anything about that, because if you open it up to a guy who was here for half a season, you've opened up a lot of can of worms. I just feel like there should be a couple exceptions that we can sort of acknowledge
special
in some capacity.
Special achievement.
Yeah. Maybe it just isn't that important. Maybe this just isn't that big a deal. Like, everyone remembers CeCe Sabathia and that'll never change, but I don't know. I think that's all, Tom. Oh, you know what? Here's a guy that I didn't mention. Doug Melvin, the general manager of the Brewers, who rebuilt them. Yes. He's got to go on that Walk of Honor, too, or Walk of Fame, too, doesn't he, at some point?
I would hope so. I would hope so. It would mean a lot to him, and he's one of the most successful front office people they've ever had, and just a great baseball person, too. So, yeah, that would be great. He still lives in Milwaukee, so.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had some conversations with him for the podcast. I mean, I'm completely biased. I very much enjoy talking to him, and I very much appreciate, as growing up a Brewers fan, seeing this team return to relevance, and I appreciate the architect who built that. He gets knocked a little bit by Brewers fans for, the way that they couldn't necessarily sustain that success, but the Brewers had certain challenges that I think.
Well, just look where they were when he took them over. They just had the worst season in franchise history by a long shot. So, and he got him, made some moves. He made the Sabathia trade and the Greinke trade. I ranked the four biggest trades in franchise history, and he's got two of them and ranks right there with the pickup of Vukovich, Simmons, and Fingers as far as what it changing the course of franchise history. He ended a 26-year playoff drought.
Yeah, for sure he did. And not only does he have those two trades to acquire Greinke and Sabathia, but he also put the groundwork in place. Well, not he executed the trade that sent Carlos Gomez to Houston and brought Josh Hader back to the Brewers. So we don't have the advantage of time to know if that winds up being one of the greatest trades in Brewers history, but it's not on it's got to be in the top 15 at this point, So we'll see. That could be another big one, lasting legacy. Yep. I think that's all I got, Tom. Anybody else you want to mention?
Nope. I think we hit them all. We mentioned a lot of guys. So I think we've made a pretty strong case that the Brewers Walk of Fame is a little too exclusive.
Yeah, we don't know who has a vote. My understanding is about 100 people vote, but loosen up, guys. There's some good names out there, and you don't have to add them
all.
Honor
the Brewers. Honor the Brewers. They're leading up to these voters to honor the Brewers.
Plenty of real estate out in front of Miller Park for some new additions to the Walk of Fame. So that'll do it, this week's edition of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Tom, we'll find more to talk about. I'm sure we'll do this again.
All right, JR, thanks.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Find us on Twitter. You can find Hodricourt at Hodricourt, pretty simple enough. And me at JR Radcliffe, also pretty simple enough. And thanks for tuning in. We will check in again very soon. Take care.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.